You're listening to the Tiny Giant Losses podcast. Tiny Giant Losses is a collection of resources and services for empowering women to heal after reproductive loss of any kind, including miscarriage, stillbirth, infant loss, giving up a child for adoption, termination, infertility diagnosis, and the difficult decision to live a childless life. Learn more at tinygiantlosses.com. Hello, hello, lovely baby lost mamas. This is Lindsay from Tiny Giant Losses. In this week's episode, we're sharing an exercise in loving kindness meditation, talking about step two in our series on six steps of healing, reviewing the book Layla's Story, and talking about a celebrity baby loss that won't leave you asking, why? And an interview with me? Yeah. With me. Don't worry, it'll make sense when we get to it. And now let's get going with our show. This week's exercise is called Loving Kindness Meditation, Metta Bhavana, or more simply, Metta. It's taught everywhere from meditation centers around the world to Google's headquarters in Silicon Valley, where it is hailed as a way to liberate ourselves from suffering for the good of all beings, and also to be a happier, more productive person. So wherever you fall on that wide spectrum, and whatever your motivations may be, I hope this practice is of benefit to you in your healing after baby loss. We start practicing metta by sitting comfortably. So I'm adjusting my seating position to prepare. You can do the same. If you already have a meditation practice, this is a wonderful way to end each sit. And if not, just take a few moments to get calm and settled before you begin. So take a seat and get cozy. We'll begin by taking a few deep breaths. Breathe in. Breathe out. In. Out. And again. And out. And we'll start our metta practice with a thought. That thought is, may I be happy, or may I be joyful. I use the word joyful, so that's what you'll hear me saying today, but you can also use happy. As we repeat that thought, we let it become an intention, and then a feeling, or more accurately for joy, a state of mind. So we think, may I be joyful. Then we set the intention to feel joyful. May I be joyful. And then we enter into the state of joy. May I be joyful. Keep repeating this phrase and allow the joy to swell up within yourself. Once you've really established that sense of joy, you can introduce a new phrase. It's, may I be peaceful. So first we think it, may I be peaceful. Then we set an intention, may I be peaceful. And then we enter into that space, may I be peaceful. Repeating, and allow yourself to come to rest and stay at peace. If you're ready to move on to a third phrase, you can join me now. May I be free from all suffering. So first we think it. May I be free from all suffering. Then we set an intention. May I be free from all suffering. Then we allow it into our reality a little more. We enter into that state of liberation. May I be free from all suffering. It's worth noting here that suffering is different from pain. Pain is an inevitable part of life. Suffering is engaging the pain with a story. The story might be about how we don't deserve the pain, or we do deserve the pain, or we've had too much pain to bear, or that the pain should end, or even that the pain is our only connection to a lost baby. It doesn't matter what the story is about, but anything that makes the pain mental, in addition to being physical or emotional, is a story. So, when we repeat the phrase, may I be free from all suffering, we're not wishing pain away. We're accepting that it's a natural, normal, healthy part of life, and that we can choose not to suffer by not adding a story to our pain. So we keep repeating, may I be free from all suffering. And we see where it takes us. Over time, after we've strongly established these states of mind within ourselves, we can expand this practice outwards. So first we choose someone we love very much, perhaps a partner or a friend or a family member, perhaps a lost baby, whoever is very easy for you to love. And we wish these same three things for that person. So for example, if I choose my son, Chen Reze, I might repeat, may Chen be joyful. May Chen be peaceful. May Chen be free from all suffering. Later, we can expand outward further, first choosing people we love, then people we like, then people who seem pleasant but not really know them or only see them around. And then people might have maybe neutral feelings or ambivalent feelings about. And eventually we can even expand this practice into sending it to people we actively dislike. Be gentle with yourself as you expand this practice. There's no rush to love the whole world right now. But do see where it takes you as you expand. Explore into it as you go. Doing this for 5 or 10 minutes a day can provide some really solid benefits. Doing it first thing in the morning, or every day before bed, or at the end of an established meditation or yoga practice really helps make it a habit. You may find strong benefits emerging as soon as the first time you practice it, or it may need a little longer to take root. If you find this practice to be beneficial, or if you have questions about it, we'll be talking about it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/tinygiantlosses. Join the conversation there. Next up, it's time for the 6 steps of healing. Last week we talked about step 3, nourish and tonify, and this week it's time for step 2, engage the energy. We've already shared an example of engaging the energy in this podcast with Nita. So let's look at a few more examples. Step 2 includes ceremony, prayer, chanting, affirmations, visualizations, light therapy, Reiki, the laying on of hands, energy work, mudras, laughter, and even the placebo effect. It also includes low concentration homeopathic remedies. Basically, it includes anything that works with magic and mystery as its main tools. When we heard from Susan Weed on the first episode of the Tiny Giant Losses podcast, she called Step 2 the Shaman's Playground, and I think that's such a wonderful name for it. It can seem a little out there for some people, but it can be incredibly effective in some places, as many cultural anthropologists have found in shamanic traditions around the world. That's not to say that I think everyone with cancer should skip surgery and other medical treatments and only go with Step 2, but rather to say that it can be used in combination with other steps, or for less physically dangerous situations, it can be a primary approach to healing. So, just for example, many people feel a tightness in their throat or a heaviness on their heart during grief. And this would be a fantastic set of tools to select from for these kinds of symptoms. Let's look a little more at what engage the energy actually means. So let's start with the end first, energy. By energy, we mean life force, which some people call the auric body or chi or all kinds of other names. And now let's look at engage. So to engage is not to just observe, nor is it to control. It's more like to guide or to work along with. So when we engage the energy, we're working with this life force energy. We're guiding it by suggestion or intention. That sounds very abstract, and that's because, well, it is. So that's why different modalities are used within Step 2. It's not so much that you're just willing your energy to shift. That's way too abstract for most people to even begin to do. It's more that you're using external representations to do internal work. So, for example, with ceremony work, such as in funerals, you're using specific external symbols to work with mental, emotional, and energetic states, whether it's lighting a candle, offering flowers, singing, chanting, walking in procession, praying, releasing a butterfly. Any of this symbolizes our own energy work and allows us to do it with the aid of these symbols and tools. So now let's take this idea and apply it specifically to baby loss grief. So I just mentioned ceremony, which can be a very powerful tool for healing. Some of you may have already had a ceremony surrounding your baby loss, especially if it was a funeral after an infant death. However, that type of ceremony, saying goodbye symbolically, is available to all people who have experienced baby loss. It can be especially powerful for women who have made the decision to live a childless life as a way of saying goodbye to the dream of children, which would otherwise be something too intangible to really work with in a clear way. Other types of ceremony include welcoming the potential for a new pregnancy after loss, or honoring that you are a mother even if you don't have physical children, or celebrating anniversaries of a loss, such as a due date, in a joyful way. No matter which type of ceremony you choose, these are powerful opportunities for externalizing what you're going through internally and receiving the support that you need while working with your own energy. Another way to engage the energy is prayer. The basic idea of prayer is turning over control of something that you never had control over. It's a relinquishing of power that we never held in the first place. So, for example, in some belief structures, it could be a prayer to watch over the souls of miscarried babies. If someone believes all the parts of that, that souls exist, that fetuses have souls, that souls need watching over, and that there's a higher power that is capable of watching over souls, then this prayer can be an immense weight off that person's shoulders. It's like a big sigh of relief. Whew, it's taken care of. And when we look at things we wish we could control, but we cannot, we find wonderful opportunities to use prayer as a tool for healing. It's like what Byron Katie says. There are three kinds of business. There's your business, there's other people's business, and then there's God's business. When you're minding other people's business or God's business, no one is minding your business. You have to mind your business and leave everything else alone. You can, of course, replace the word God with whatever works for you, be it universe, spirit, life, goddess, it's your call. But I think you'll find that the basic principle holds true. something people often think of as very similar to prayer is chanting. While there can be overlap between the two, there's some key differences. Chanting may be more ritualized, and it's usually intended to reach a trance state. When we reach a trance, our minds can open up to all sorts of unexpected insights. What may seem like a complex problem may be solved, or may simply melt away. In this way, it's also a relinquishing, but it's more like a relinquishing of the thinking mind, a letting go into a greater intelligence at work. Personally, I love to chant Om Mani Padme Hum and the Heart Sutra, but there are many, many chants that you can choose from. These days, there are even a bunch of them on YouTube. And then another somewhat similar tool is affirmations. Affirmations help us change our perspectives on things, which has actually been shown to change the way that our brains release hormones in response to different stimuli, thus benefiting our moods and perhaps making us more resilient too. So when we change our minds, what we're really changing is our brains. An example of this is the affirmation, "I choose love over fear." By repeating this affirmation aloud in our minds or in a journal, we can actually make a habit of choosing love over fear, and in a sense, rewiring our brains to do so automatically. Just as a quick aside, this month's reader reward on Patreon is a fantastic list of affirmations for working with anxiety and sadness, embracing gratitude, setting healthy boundaries, attuning to trust, and more. So then we have visualization work, which has become very popular in recent years with vision boards and the like. However, it can also be much simpler and more direct than getting out the glue and scissors and magazines and all that. For example, you could envision yourself talking with a lost baby, or you could envision your body in perfect health. No matter what you choose to visualize, the most effective way to do it often involves four steps. Step one, set your goal. For example, I would like to let my baby know how much I care and to wish him peace. So you would be specific with your goal. Step two, you create a clear mental picture. It helps to be seated and relatively peaceful when you do this. I like to light a candle. You could, with the example I'm using, picture yourself holding your baby in a peaceful setting. Step three is engage the energy. Haha. So in our example, you would feel the love and care for your baby, and you would communicate this, and then you would wish them peace, and you would really feel this as you do this. After some time, when you're ready, you move on to step four. Step four is let it go and end the visualization. So this is when we send that energy out, whether it's to the universe or to your lost baby or to your own body, wherever it is that it needs to go. But you just send it out with love and joy, let it go, and you end your visualization. Two other ways to engage the energy also work with visuals. They're color therapy and light therapy. You might find them in some spas and healing centers. They both use visuals as external representations of moods, mental states, or parts of the energy field, such as chakras. Then there's Reiki, the laying on of hands, and energy work. These three are pretty similar in a lot of ways. They usually involve having a trained specialist engage your energy field through their energy field or through what they might describe as divine energy working through them. And then we have laughter. Whether it's real or forced, laughter creates all sorts of changes in our levels of endorphins and other mood-related hormones. We can use laughter yoga, jokes, funny books, comedy sketches, funny online videos, comedy movies to engage this energy. If it makes you laugh, it's working. By the way, for those who join Tiny Giant Losses on Patreon at $10 or more per month, we offer weekly participatory laughter yoga sessions. So if that appeals to you, be sure to check it out on Patreon. And then we have low-dose homeopathic remedies and placebo effect. There isn't really much, chemically speaking, to low-dose homeopathic remedies. And yet for many people, they really work. Although you're welcome to disagree, I believe that this is because of the placebo effect. That's not to disparage them. The placebo effect can be very effective, especially when it comes to psychological issues and, interestingly, digestive issues, too. Essentially, whether it's a homeopathic remedy or a so-called sugar pill, we tell our bodies and our minds that we're getting better when we take a placebo. And then, guess what? More often than we would without it, we get better. It could be the homeopathic remedy, but I find that what's even more important is the belief that something is taking place. As far as I'm concerned, if we believe it and it works, then it's something worth believing in. That's pretty much the main gist of Engage the Energy. So that's it for step two, Engage the Energy. In 2 weeks, we'll continue this series with step one, collect information. And now it's time for our two-minute review. In this week's two-minute review, we're looking at Layla's Story by Vanessa Gorman. Vanessa Gorman is the filmmaker behind Losing Layla, which tells the story of her daughter's birth, life of 8 hours, and death, all during a loving but strained relationship with her partner, who had never really wanted a child. And she and her rainbow baby were the subjects of Regarding Raphael, a documentary about pregnancy and motherhood after loss. And she and her rainbow baby were the subjects of Regarding Raphael, a documentary about pregnancy and motherhood after loss. In her book, Layla's Story, Vanessa writes of the ecstasy and the agony of longing for children, and then at age 39, losing her firstborn after a meconium inhalation during birth. It's written like a journal, with total openness and a sharp eye for her own growth and shortcomings. It's at times funny, tragic, and even erotic. I laughed. I cried. I thought, wow, this is a perfect read for women who are overcoming sexual inhibitions after reproductive loss. It's written with the author's focus on embracing life, embracing love, embracing one's sexuality, and growing spiritually. And it's sprinkled with bits of wisdom that left me thinking more than a week after I finished the book. Trigger warnings. The book also deals with an unsteady sexual relationship, abortion, and fears surrounding loss of fertility after age 40. If that's triggering for you, you might want to skip this one. Otherwise, I highly recommend this book to anyone who has experienced baby loss of any kind. In particular, I recommend it to women who have experienced multiple losses, women who've lost an infant, women who are questioning their ability to have children past their 30s, and women who are recovering their sexuality after loss. Just a quick side note, we have copies of the documentary film Losing Layla available for patrons of Tiny Giant Losses. Check patreon.com/tinygiantlosses for details. And now it's time for our segment on celebrity baby loss. This episode's celebrity is singer-songwriter and activist Annie Lennox, one of my personal favorites, who is well known for her androgynous looks and her song Walking on Broken Glass, as well as her song Why, which I lovingly mutilated at the beginning of this episode. Those two tracks, by the way, she recorded as half of the duo The Eurythmics. In 1988, Annie Lennox's son Daniel was born still. In an interview with BBC Radio 4, she said her son's stillbirth, quote, had an immense impact on me. It made me realize that the human condition is immensely fragile and strong at the same time. She added that at the time she lost her son, an earthquake killed hundreds of thousands of people in Turkey. Curiously enough, she said, I identified with those people because I saw that loss is all around me. When I hear about other people's tragedies and losses, I so empathize with them. This kind of empathy and compassion is something we can all cultivate in ourselves with the exercise of metta that we shared at the beginning of this episode. Lennox went on to say that she uses the pain that is part of life to fuel her creative work. She said, I don't know if the pain has to come first, and then you have to be in the pain before you write something of any value. But it's almost like you're a potter, and that's the clay you use. This is a fantastic example of giving purpose to your loss. and it's something that she used not only after her son was born still, but also after both her parents died of cancer. Shortly before losing her son, she wrote the song Angel about her aunt who died at age 57. It was released on the album We Two Are One the year after her son's stillbirth. In a later interview, she said that Angel is, quote, sometimes hard for me to sing. It started off as a poem about a great aunt who had died. The song turned into something else after the death of my first child. But it's about death generally. I will die. We will all die. Where do we find meaning in our lives? Indeed, Annie. Indeed. She re-recorded the song in 1997 in honor of Diana, Princess of Wales. These days, Annie Lennox devotes her energies to feminist causes, AIDS activism, and her two daughters, Lola, born in 1990, 2 years after her son was born still, and Tali, born in 1993. Sounds like she's doing well on the finding meaning front. Next up is our interview. This week's interview is a little unorthodox. I'll be interviewing myself. Or, more specifically, I'll be using a technique called Gestalt therapy to let one aspect of myself interview another aspect of myself. Consider it a prelude to next week's step of healing, step one, gather information. I'm not going to go into the details of Gestalt theory here. I'll just say that the main purposes are to get into the present moment and to generate our own insights about how we can grow and heal. And the main gist is that we talk with ourselves and or other people we imagine to be there in order to resolve issues that are troubling us. Trigger warning, this interview will discuss multiple losses and pregnancy after loss. If any of those things are triggering for you, please skip it.
So to get started with this exercise, I'm going to sit in one position, and then I will alternate between this position and another position to ask myself questions from a different internal and external perspective. So I'm going to get started in position one. So Lindsay, what's going on right now with you? Now I'm moving to the other position. Well, generally I'm doing really well, but I keep having these fears come up, and they're not really lingering, but I would really like to find a healthy way to work with them and work through them. Now I'm moving back. Okay, and what do these fears have to do with? Returning. Well, as you know, I had a miscarriage in 2014, and then I gave birth in 2015, and my son very unexpectedly died the next day. With no warning, he seemed perfectly healthy, and then suddenly he was just gone. And it was quite a shock to me when this happened. When I had the miscarriage, I did some research, I talked with other people, and I learned that it's very common, happens a lot. I thought it was just a one-time loss. And sometimes during my pregnancy in 2015, I would get a little nervous, but generally I was just very, very trusting that everything was going to be fine. We didn't even find out the gender of our son until he was born, because when we would get an ultrasound, we'd just say, we just want to know that our baby's healthy. That's the most important thing for us. And everything seemed to indicate that he was until he wasn't. And now I'm nearing 12 weeks pregnancy, which is around when I lost my first pregnancy. And both of those other losses happened in November. It's almost the end of November right now, so I think that might be a little triggering for me. But I generally feel very happy and hopeful. It's just that every now and then I have this creeping fear kind of sneaks in.
Back to position one.
And when this happens, when this fear sneaks in, what specifically does it seem to be in response to? Yeah. You know, I think it's not so much that I've lost all trust that this pregnancy can be perfectly fine. And I understand intellectually that my odds are very good. I think it was the element of surprise of losing my son that makes this fear sneakier. It almost seems like if I get too comfortable, that is unsafe in some way.
Back to position one.
Do you think that that's true? That being comfortable is unsafe? No, I don't. I really don't. Actually, I think being uncomfortable is more unsafe. And one of the things that I'm really grateful about with my pregnancy with my son is that I was so trusting. That's what's so funny about this fear coming up now, is it's kind of like contradicting that in a way. Yeah, I hadn't really looked at it that way. But, I think that letting myself trust and feel comfortable would feel a lot safer to me, because I would have this time with this baby no matter what happens, whether this child is still alive when I die at a ripe old age, or whether, something happens tomorrow, that I've given my love and my care throughout this pregnancy. That feels a lot better to me. That feels a lot more connected, and it feels like using our time together wisely, no matter how short or how long the time is. It seems like that really struck a chord with you, and I'm noticing that you've teared up a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really powerful for me to be able to step back and see that a little more clearly. And to understand that no matter how afraid I might feel, that doesn't protect my children. But giving them love and having an environment that feels safe for them, Maybe is protecting them in some way. It feels like a great opportunity. And one that I feel ready to choose to take. Are there any other fears that have been arising for you surrounding this? Yeah, actually, I hadn't really thought about it in this way, but I think that something that's coming up for me is I should step back. In Germany, where I live, they have a system where you give birth and then you go home pretty much just a few hours after. It's very, very soon after you give birth. And then they have midwives who come and visit you. And they check in on your health, they check in on the baby's health, they check on things like, latching, with breastfeeding, and everything. And generally, the midwife would come pretty quickly after the child is born. But the midwife for my area was unavailable initially. And by the time she arrived for our appointment, my husband and my son and I were at the hospital. And it was around the time that we were getting the news that he was brain dead and would be coming off of life support soon. And after that, the midwife came once. And then she never came back again. And we tried calling her numerous times, but she just kind of dropped off the map. Stopped answering the phone. Obviously, I was in a state of grief, so, just calling someone repeatedly to ask for care was a big challenge. And later, we found a different midwife to come. And she was wonderful, and she was so supportive, but it took, 3 or 4 weeks. And in the meantime, I didn't have any care from any professionals of any kind. So, doctor or midwife or psychologist or nothing. They didn't offer any services at the hospital, really, except that we had met a chaplain who we quite liked, but she wasn't like visiting our home or something like this. And then typically the midwife would step in and play a large role in helping the family through the grief, in this case myself and my husband. And this midwife just didn't do that, and I had really trusted her. Prior to that, I'd met with her for like 8 months before the birth, 7 months, something like that, and really gotten to know her. She attended my wedding, and then it really felt, it kind of triggered this sense of abandonment in me when she just disappeared. I've literally never heard from her since then, and that's scary for me. To think that I could lose someone that I trust over anything surrounding an upcoming birth or even potentially a loss. It's scary for me that I might not have the support structures that I need or the support structures that I think that I have in place if something goes wrong. Returning to position one. So let's imagine that you can invite her here right now to talk to her. So you're going to look over to the door, you're going to welcome her in, and then we're going to pretend that she's taking an empty seat here in front of you, and you can talk to her there. You ready?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready. So. Hey. Didn't expect to see you here. You want to take a seat? Yeah, so I was really surprised that I didn't hear from you after that one meeting, after Chen died. And we really needed your support. Emotionally and even, I mean, physically, I was having problems with the stitches and all kinds of, I mean, just, you know, normal midwife stuff. That a midwife's job is to take care of it, and you weren't here. And I feel sad, and I feel angry about that.
So now we're going to imagine what she would say in response. So you're going to take the seat where you've just imagined her to be sitting, and then you're going to speak as though you're her.
Yeah, I messed up. I was really scared. I don't like it when babies die. And I didn't really know what to say to you. I didn't know what to say to your husband. I wondered if I could have changed anything by coming earlier, even though I know I probably couldn't have. I apologize. Should have been there.
And is there anything that you would want to say to her in response to that?
Yeah. Thank you. You might have done this already, but I really hope that you can get the training and support that you need to be able to help other women in this situation, because it sucks. It really sucks. And, I know it's hard for you, too. I promise it's hard for them. If you can either learn how to be with it or refer them to someone who can. I'm sure it would mean a lot to other women to just lose a child in whatever way.
Okay, is there anything else that you need to hear from her?
No, I don't think so. I could imagine that she agrees to get training, but I think that's up to her. I'm just going to leave it.
And what about your current care providers? Do you think that they're able to be there for you if and when something were to happen?
Yeah, I really do. My current midwife has actually worked with many couples who are going through pregnancy after loss. And she's super supportive. She's also one of the few midwives in Germany who actively supports women through miscarriage. Yeah, like, you know, we'll sit there with them
through the whole thing. Usually they just tell women to go home and do it on their own unless they need hospitalization. So I think she's very adept at standing in the doorway between life and death and holding space there. So, yeah, I trust her. And my current OBGYN is the same one as before. She's been great all along. Very happy to stay with her. Yeah, so medically, I think I have a good support structure in place. Okay, and is there anything else that you need, or anything else that would help you to work through these feelings of fear that you've been experiencing? That's a good question. I think returning to a more regular meditation practice would be a great tool for me right now. That's something that I haven't been doing as regularly as I like to lately, and I do find that it makes a big difference for me. So I think returning to that would be really wonderful. And what else? I think continuing to journal, that's been a really powerful tool for me in working with and dealing with fears arising so far. And more exercise, too. I find that when I'm physically active, my body can just kind of work out some of this stuff, almost on its own. Especially if I'm going on longer walks out in nature, it just sort of naturally works its way out physically, emotionally, mentally, everything. So yeah, I think since the weather's gotten a lot colder where I live, it's, you know, even right now it's mid-afternoon and the grass outside is still all covered in frost where it's shady, so it's quite cold here. And I tend to avoid the cold, but I think if I just start bundling up extra warm and making a point to get out, especially on days like today when it's sunny out, I think that would be a very powerful tool for me. I can't think of anything else. Let's see. Well, obviously I'm doing something right now. Gestalt therapy, that's very effective, I'm finding. And it's something I can return to as needed. And I think continuing to talk with other women who have experienced loss, and especially women who have experienced loss and then gone on to have a healthy rainbow baby or rainbow babies, like that. Just reminding myself that happens often, that is a norm, so to speak, would really help. I love working on tiny giant losses, but I think in a way it's sort of over-normalizing loss for me. Like doing so much research and spending so much time talking with other people who have experienced loss can make it a little bit like, oh yes, it's the normal thing to lose a pregnancy, as though it happens in the majority of cases when it doesn't. It is a normal thing, a common thing, but not the most common thing. And I think that it would be a good time to remind myself of that regularly through talking with other women, through maybe photos even, or Yeah, that might be a nice one. I could do something called a butterfly collection. So, what I do, you can also do this with physical magazine clippings or postcards or whatever, but I use Pinterest, and I find women who are inspiring to me, who are 20 years older than me or more, who, for whatever reason, inspire me. So I could do a butterfly collection that is especially about women who experienced loss and went on to have rainbow children. If possible, I maybe could even find photos of them with their children. I think that would kind of normalize the idea of a healthy rainbow child. One other thing I could do is start working with motherwort again. I find it to be a really wonderful herb for dealing with anxiety. So I have the fresh plant tincture. I find usually 5 drops is plenty for the level of anxiety or fear that I'm dealing with right now. Maybe even 3 drops would be fine. So I could work with motherwort again. Oh yeah, something else I could do is ceremony. So I was planning on having a baby shower sometime, not in the immediate future, but in some months. And I could at least start to plan it, at least invite some people who know that I'm pregnant and who are supportive no matter what the outcome of that. Just pick a date. Give it a little more solidity. And perhaps make a kind of ceremony surrounding that to welcome this child into the world. I think that would feel really safe for me. I think that would be very reassuring in a very deep way for me to have that as both a ceremony and as a social occasion. And then therapy. I have a great therapist. I have a session with her next week. I have been talking with her once a week for a long time, and it was down to 2 weeks, and now it's once a month. But, pregnancy after loss can be a challenge. And I think it might be time to go back to 2 times a month and see how that goes. Okay, great. So I'm hearing a lot of insights here. You've mentioned therapy, motherwort, ceremony, exercise, meditation, a lot of different things. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Yeah, hearing that list just now, I also thought of breathing exercises. I usually do one a day, but it's just a certain one that I repeat most of the time. And there are a few others that I could integrate that are really great against anxiety. So I think I'm going to do that as well. Great. Perfect. And is there anything else that you want to add to feel closure about this particular situation? No, I feel really grateful that I've been able to talk this out, to feel through this, and to find a lot of solid ways to deal with it when it does arise, as well as a mental and emotional framework for understanding that it's not necessary for me anymore, that I don't need to be afraid, that being afraid doesn't serve me or my baby in any way, and that I can just let it go. I can just release it. But if it does come back, I have tools that I can use to deal with it. That feels very empowering. I feel really ready. Like I can just stand tall and march out into the world and just like handle it. Yeah, it feels great. Thank you. All right, thank you.
So listeners, that was a little example of Gestalt therapy in action, with me interviewing myself about miscarriage, infant loss, and pregnancy after loss. You can do this at home. You just need a space in which you feel comfortable and a few different surfaces that you can sit on and move between easily. I was using a chair and a few different pillows set on a soft surface. That worked really well. If you have any questions about this, feel free to ask in the Facebook group. We're starting some discussions about the podcast there. And I wish you all the best with this exercise.
This episode was brought to you by three lost babies: Luna Julianne, Silas Lane, Chenrezig Merlin James. Thank you for listening to the Tiny Giant Losses podcast. We'll be back with a new episode in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can learn more and get resources at tinygiantlosses.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/tinygiantlosses.